Our gospel lesson is from Matthew, the 25th chapter, and it continues Jesus' parables of the kingdom. This one is familiar to you. It is the parable of the 10 talents. And we'll be talking about those talents and what they mean a little bit more in the sermon this morning. Let us now be attentive to good news according to Matthew, chapter 25. For it will be as when a man going on a journey called his servants and entrusted to them his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. He who had received the 5 talents went at once and traded with them, and he made 5 talents more. So also he who had the 2 talents made 2 talents more. But he who had received the 1 talent went and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. Now after a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them. And he who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 talents more, saying, Master, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here, I have made 5 talents more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. And he also who had the 2 talents came forward, saying, Master, you delivered to me 2 talents. Here, I have made 2 talents more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. He also who had received the 1 talent came forward, saying, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you did not winnow. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours. But his master answered him, You wicked and slothful servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sowed and gather where I have not winnowed. Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming I should have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to him who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has will more be given, and he will have abundance. But from him who has not, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the worthless servant into the outer darkness. Their men will weep and gnash their teeth. So ends the lesson. Pray with me, please. We come together to show our love for you, God. We come to live as your people and to be those who seek you with all our hearts. And so now open to us the way of finding you. Open to us the way of keeping your commandments. And may the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts together give you glory, you who are our strength, our Redeemer, and our hope. Amen. Congregationalists are part of the Free Church tradition. That means that we're not in a state-supported church, nor are we tied to a hierarchical system of government. In fact, when people say to me, "I don't believe in organized religion," I say to them, "Then you should be a Congregationalist." Because we're the only church in the world where we circle the wagons and shoot into the middle. My colleague, Sam Shaw, likes to talk about the free church, the free market, and the free society as all being intertwined. Yet for all of the freedom that we have, be it economic or political or spiritual, there is also accountability. How does that old saying go? Freedom isn't free. The free market has its system of checks and balances. And as I've done some reading this week, I noted that risk is also part of the free market economy. And the willingness to take that risk is at its core. Watching the news or reading the paper certainly lets us see the risk involved in investing. And for that matter, there's even a risk in owning a home, as we all monitor the real estate bubble. Now, when we take a risk, we're accountable for it, aren't we? If our hunch, if our judgment was correct, then we benefit. If it wasn't, then we don't. What is true in the free market is also true in the free society, and it is also true in spiritual matters, too. Freedom is a gift, but it is a gift for which we must answer. Authentic spirituality is accountable spirituality. This week we read another one of Matthew's parables on the coming of the kingdom, the parable of the 10 talents. Let's get a little background here so that we can make better sense of this text. A talent is a unit of weight. It represents a very large amount of money, and scholars tell us that it was equivalent to 15 years' wages for a common laborer. So each talent that was given represented the economic power or economic opportunity for a goodly part of a lifetime. And the structure of the story is set up to deliberately telegraph something to us. It is the story of a superior who gives directions, gifts, responsibilities to his servants. Then the superior goes away on a journey, comes back from it, and demands an accounting for what has been given. This is what you might call the scriptural equivalent of a performance review. And the story wants us to immediately get the point. The superior is God. The servants are us, humanity, people. God makes the world. God gives us gifts. God sends us prophets, opens divine life to us, and then wants to know what we've done with the gifts we've been given. Did we, the creature, act as the Creator intended? Did we do the will of the Creator? The story hinges on the answers to those questions. Storyteller and theologian John Shea comments that the normal way that these stories play out is to have the first two characters get it wrong and the third one get it right. Because there's a certain comedic tie to this. As we wait for the first two to get their comeuppance, as the last one rises to the top. And we, of course, always identify ourselves with the last one, don't we? I mean, after all, we are always the underdog. If truth be known, we're never the person that comes out on top. Here, however, Matthew pulls a switch, and it doesn't come out the way that we expect. The first two do it right, and the last one goes off into darkness. There's no comedy here. It's tragedy. So this is not a feel-good story. And of course, it's not meant to be a feel-good story. It's designed to remind us that freedom is accountable and that there are certain ways in which we are to act if we are God's people. In short, there are spiritual laws which govern us just as surely as there are physical laws. The difference is that sometimes those spiritual laws are more difficult to discern or to observe, which is why we have stories like this. The most basic spiritual law is that to give, to get, means to give. Let me say it again. To get means to give. It begins with God's gift. To God's gift to us in creation, breathing into us the breath of life. Because in that moment, God shows that God's very nature is self-giving. One of the early teachers of the early church, Gregory the Great, put it this way. He said, "The man setting out for foreign parts entrusted his goods to his servants, for he granted his spiritual gifts to those who believe in him. To one he entrusted 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1. There are 5 bodily senses, sight, hearing, taste, smell, and touch. The 5 talents represent the gift of the senses, that is, knowledge of externals. The 2 talents signify theory and practice. The 1 talent signifies theory alone." Now, here's a wonderful allegorical interpretation of that parable. And notice that how the 5 talents and the 2 talents multiply. But when we live in theory alone, we lose what we have. When we live in theory alone, we lose what we have. Our lives are gifts. Gifts that are meant to be used and employed. Because the very nature of the giver, God, is self-giving. We are to cooperate by behaving the same way that God does. We are to give. You see, every time we give away the gift of the Spirit, it doubles. As the gift increases, so does our consciousness of God's presence and even our own self-awareness. We enter into the joy of the Master by giving freely as the Master does. We take risks and we invest ourselves in others because God has done just that with us. Now, this, of course, runs contrary to the physical law, and I'll sum it up in this proverb, you can't have your cake and eat it, because you give away the Spirit and more comes. It doesn't diminish. You give of yourself and there's more to give. 5 talents become 5 more, and on it goes. 2 of the servants get it, and they invest themselves. They take the risk of self-giving. The other one breaks the law and tries to bury the gift of the Spirit so that he can hold on to it, possess it, keep it safe. And what he does is he succumbs to fear, especially the fear of loss, the fear of not enough. And it is this fear that cripples him. It is this fear that cripples so many people and cripples even so many churches. We've got to hold on to what we have. We can't share it. God forbid that there's not enough for us. A talent buried, however, is not a talent saved, but a talent lost. As it is hidden away, it doesn't increase in value. It decreases to nothing. Fear of risk, fear of relationship, fear of change, fear of not enough for me, fear of giving of ourselves doesn't save us. It diminishes us. When we succumb to fear, we become less. Anthony Robinson, church consultant and pastor, wrote this in Christian Century several years ago. He talks about the wonderful Australian film Strictly Ballroom. It says that it contains a recurring thematic line. A life lived in fear is a life half lived. A life lived in fear is a life half lived. And what does Robinson say? According to the parable, this overstates the quality of such a life by one half. A life lived in fear is a life not lived. Perhaps our ultimate fear may even be of our own freedom. It is part of the gift, the talent given to us. And it is meant to be used, not hoarded. Some folks are so busy protecting their freedom, and here it can be freedom of whatever, that they become prisoners instead. Life gives freedom. The Spirit are all God's gifts to us, and they are to be used. The ultimate freedom that we're given, as Martin Luther pointed out, comes from Christ and is obtained through self-giving. We get our freedom because Christ gave it to us by giving up his freedom and giving up his life, which he got back. The reality is then that we're to use it or lose it. And anyone who has studied a language can tell you that if you don't use it, you will lose it. I know that for a fact. I tried to read something in Hebrew the other day and I was embarrassed. If you don't use it, you lose it. And spiritual life is the same. Paul is speaking the language of spiritual growth to the church in Thessalonica. He urges the people to remember that they're children of the day and of the light, and then act like it. He's telling them, use your gifts. We're not supposed to retreat off into a corner somewhere and cower until the Lord comes again. And Paul tells the people to encourage one another, build up each other. He doesn't tell them to withdraw from engaging the world, from entering into the risk of relationship. And those who read these scriptures, especially those that speak about the parousia or the Lord's return, and use them to scare people into a particular way of thinking, are just plain wrong. Now, sorry, I rarely take such an intolerant stance. But what goes on with a lot of this end time stuff is just bad theology and even worse biblical scholarship. Because if you study history, you'll understand that people have been talking about the second coming for years and years and years. And every time they say, oh, Jesus is coming back, and they get all ready for it, it doesn't happen. Okay? I could tell you story after story. I'm convinced that Jesus came back in about 1210, and the only person who was ready was a little nun in Gubbio, Italy. And all the rest of us have been living in the tribulation ever since. That's my theory. That's why I'm an aha millennialist. When Jesus comes back, I'll go, aha, that's what he meant. Don't worry about when he comes back. Live like every day he's coming back, because he's already here. Isn't that the point? We're not going to get the second coming until we realize the reality of the first coming. Duh. People are making movies, writing books, selling all kinds of stuff, and they're missing the point. History has shown us time and time again that those who get caught up in the search for the second coming are more like the servant with the one talent. They're caught up in theory, and that just misses the point. Remember the point of the story? God is the giver. And as God gives, so are we to give. To be God's people means living the gifts that we've been given, enjoying the senses that allow us to experience the wonder of the creation around us and within us. Because we have been given a gift, we give. Because God has taken the risk of relationship through law and prophets, covenant and nation, and then in the new covenant, in the Word made flesh, in Jesus, we are to do the same. The point is that spirituality isn't a warm fuzzy. It's accountable. And it makes a difference. It makes a difference in our lives, and it makes a difference in the lives of those around us. Accountable spirituality is engaging in the risk of transforming love. The love that God has shown us in the Christ, and now in each other, through the gift of the Spirit. Accountable spirituality begins in our hearts. It spreads to our homes, energizes our church, and moves out into our neighborhood and beyond. Accountable spirituality is seeing that the day of the Lord isn't about the end of the world, but about the world transformed into the place that God intended it to be from the beginning. A place of purity, a place of justice, a place of beauty, and a place of peace. Every time that we take the risk of relationship, every time we live past our fears, every time we use our talent rather than bury it, we bring a glimpse of that day. So today I urge you, give away your talents. Invest lavishly, generously, recklessly in others. Experience the wonder of God's world around you, in others, in yourself. Be the servant who knows that the rule is to get means to give it away, and then do it. Therefore, encourage one another and build each other up, because accountable spirituality is about how we live in response to God's generosity toward us. We have been given much. Now let's be generous in our living.